It is episode 84 of Digital Outbox. May the 4th be with you. Yes, it is Star Wars Day, so happy Star Wars Day. And also, happy birthday to me.
Bless. I didn't know that.
I am joined today by Ian.
Oh, happy birthday to you.
What better things to be doing than a podcast on your birthday, eh?
Or eating 4 mini burgers.
I'm saving that till later. See, it was a birthday treat.
But like, if I'd known it's your birthday, I would have baked you a cake.
Thank you very much. Very thoughtful.
Well, this day just gets better and better.
Yeah, you're
great day at work. Had a great tours at Badminton. Done my 16,000 steps. Inverness. Sorry if there's any Celtic fans out there, but ha-ha!
some football's been going on and someone wasn't supposed to win, right?
Oh! Fantastic result.
You may have been happy on those like beta blockers, but you're happier now, I tell you.
Oh, I tell you, this beats anything. The worst thing is I'll have a terrible migraine tomorrow just because I'm so happy right now. It's like karma.
It's the balancing of your head tech. Right.
It's like it's a force type thing. So what is it, your kiss, if you don't mind me asking?
I am now 33 years old.
Oh, my goodness. You don't look it.
I know.
But I said at least 37.
The wrinkles. But yes.
I can't. No, I better not say that.
Let's not say that.
No, let's not go there.
It has been a long while since we've talked to our listeners, and hence we've got a bit overboard on the stories. 12 pages later, we may be at the end of this podcast, but we know you've all missed us, so we're gonna chuff on nonetheless, but we will try and move through stories quite quick.
We'll do this in an hour.
Yeah?
The first half, anyway.
It's not April the 1st.
No, it's May the 4th.
There's sort of tons of location-based stuff which we'll be getting through, but we're going to start with the big news of the last, I guess it's a couple of weeks now, really, which is Sony PlayStation and their network. So they brought it down. And when did this all kick off?
Well, the first updates, when I've got it on the Sony blog on the 22nd of the 4th, but it was down the previous Wednesday.
This is a long time ago now.
Just shows how long since we've podcasted as well.
Yeah, it does. And this is all over the news, so we're sure you've heard about it. But so they took down their network, and there wasn't a lot of statement as to why this was happening.
That's since the 20th. 3 weeks. Oh, no, it's 2 weeks since we've podcasted then.
So they didn't really announce why it was happening, but then it has since transpired that they got hacked, basically, and they shut everything down to prevent any more hacking. However, it seems to that in the time that was available to the hackers, they grabbed everything and ran.
Your name, address, which is your city, state, province, zipper, postal code, your country, your email address, your birth date, your PlayStation network, Curiosity, passwords and login, and your online PSN handle.
Pretty much think of everything you need to apply for a loan. And get into any account that you could own as far as username, passwords and stuff.
And let's not forget the credit card data.
Yeah, so they've been sketchy on this, haven't they? That is a good way of putting it. They say there's no reason to think that any of that initially, data has gone, but they have since said
Initially they said it hadn't gone, so don't worry. And then it turned out that we have encrypted the credit card data.
They go to my phone.
But it's gone.
Sorry.
I don't care. I'll crack on. You just got it. I can't believe you get Star Wars as your blooming ringtone as well.
It's March of the Valkyries.
Oh, is it?
Hello?
I can't believe you're actually answering it online.
I'm on the podcast. I'll speak to you in a bit. There we go. My sister.
You done now?
Yeah.
Well, it is your birthday.
Exactly. I knew the phone was going to go.
I know. I'm not even going to cut this out. We really shouldn't be podcasting your birthday.
No, go for it. It's cool.
Anyway, so So, credit cards are all gone, and it's not just, it's like 75 million users this affects. It isn't just like a couple of million people we're talking around. It's 75 million users. But don't worry, credit card data was encrypted. Passwords weren't.
Although they've now come and said it was hashed.
Yeah, but it, fantastic.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's some untruths going about at the moment. A hashed password is as good as encrypted, and they're saying nope.
What I don't like is it's just more and more it's dripping out as it goes along. You know, so it's, and fair enough, I can understand, they maybe didn't understand how much they'd been taking at first, but they know how it's been stored. And the fact that they've had, initially they said it was clear text, and now they've said it's hashed, and it just, it goes on and on and on.
And not only that, this was going on a long time before they let everyone know. I think it was almost a month before they actually let everyone know, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's a long time.
Well, it was only 2 days ago that they announced that 25 million PC accounts have been hacked as well.
Yeah, so it's,
and that
not
was before
just
the PS3
network, is it? It's actually, no, with PC went before the PlayStation. They've clearly got something very wrong, or someone's found a particularly strong weakness.
Well, I guess
that the
interesting
weakness.
A strong weakness.
Yeah.
The interesting post was from GeoHot, who, this is the kid that initially actually cracked the PS3. And his take on it is that, you know, there's things like Xboxes have been cracked for years, iPhones have been jailbroken, you know, Androids have been rooted, all these devices have been, you know, opened up, but the other parts of the service are still protected. And his take on it is that there was a certain arrogance amongst the kind of the Sony network, and that they relied on the PS3 being unhackable. And once that was open, the other bits were very, very open then to whoever's hacked into the PS3.
That sounds much like it, doesn't it?
Yes.
If you, it's almost like, are you a PlayStation 3? Yes. Okay, we'll tell you everything. And if you were able to imitate that PlayStation 3 or get in via the back door there, then you've got access to everything.
So I guess just to kind of, it's been on all the news. I think everybody probably knows about it. Sony are allegedly, this week some services are going to come back online, but we're now at Wednesday and there's still nothing. But they'll have the full service up and running this month. So it shows you the kind of the scale of the rework they're having to do there. They're adding automated software monitoring and configuration management to help defend against new attacks, which you'd have thought would have been near for such a service of such size and scale. It sounds surprising, some of the words they're using. They're going to use enhanced levels of data protection and encryption, enhanced ability to detect software intrusions from the network. They're going to add some more firewalls, which is just very vague. You know, that doesn't mean anything to anybody unless you know the infrastructure there. Yeah, they're also going to introduce a welcome back program. So each different territory,
welcome back, please come back.
And that's what I looked at. Each territory will be offered selected PlayStation Entertainment content for free download. They don't know the specifics. I guess they have to go and probably, you know, buy a lot of the content from publishers and then make it available for free. All existing PlayStation Network customers are going to be provided with 30 days free membership in the PlayStation Plus premium service. And current members of PlayStation Plus will receive 30 days free service. And the music side, which is this Curiosity. It's a horrible name.
It is horrible, isn't it?
They're going to get 30 days of free service. Well, it's just horrid.
Curiosity.
You know what I mean? Yeah, thanks for that.
That's all right. Scribed.
Yeah. Scribd E still makes more sense. And so that's what they're planning to do. And I guess we'll just see updates on the Sony blogs over the next few weeks around that. Just from me, I know you've not got a PS3.
I do have a PS3.
Oh, no, you do? You do? I forgot you have one.
I've
just never seen you online.
Just because I never go online with it.
And funnily enough, that's my win out of this. Yeah. And I've had the PS3 since day one. The way the PS3 worked was you put in your credit card details and you added money into your, I think it was your Sony wallet, and then you spent money on things. The last time I added it was my old credit card from 2.5 years ago, and I'd added on like 40 quid. You know, so it's always been money in my wallet. I've never spent it because nothing's really come out that I've been desperate to buy and or add on.
That you haven't got on Xbox, basically.
No, the actual first party games have been pretty weak sauce. You know, Uncharted stands out.
I've not entered my details in, so I'm pretty happy about that. But then we say they're pretty happy about that, but then they've got all the rest of the details.
I'm not happy about it. I wasn't smart enough that I had a different email account, you know. So it's what I've done over the weekend is I have changed all my passwords everywhere.
Yeah,
because even though I did use different passwords, I've just went for something totally different again.
Yeah, so that's important for people to know that they've got all your sort of hints. People, you know, use hint questions and the same passwords across multiple things. That, as much as anything, don't worry just about the credit card details. You should be aware that people will be, you know, using those details against other accounts just to see what they can get to.
And there's no proof at the moment it's that people have actually used the credit card details. There are some vague reports that somebody in Australia had £2,000 taken out of his account, and that was due to Sony. But how do you prove it? Because I've lost money out of my accounts before, and it's been nothing to do with Sony or Xbox or Apple or anybody. So I think it's going to take more than one or two isolated stories to tie it back to, that is this leak.
Yeah.
But it's I've lost total faith in Sony, I must admit. This is a major, major, you know, mistake.
It'll
live long in the head. Live long in the mind. And even the console itself, if I look at the games platform on it, I still think it's pretty weak sauce.
They made a big point of the fact that, oh, we've got this free service. Isn't it amazing? Look, you can do all the things you can do on Xbox Live, but you can do it for free.
Yeah.
Well,
which was a lie.
Xbox Live comes at a cost, and you can see now that there's a good reason for for that cost as well. It's the infrastructure that Xbox Live put in place. I think people said from the start it was kind of a military grade operation, and maybe that's why they've survived all this time without these kind of big problems. I mean, I'm not going to say that they're completely immune to it, because they're probably not. But they've lasted certainly all, you know, how long is it? 7 years.
But I think we just need to finish off with, if you've got a PS3, then you need to be vigilant. Your details are probably gone, and you need to assume that. And it's go around and change hints, lie on your hints. Don't fill them in with valid things.
Yeah, you don't need a valid thing. You know? As long as it ties up. That's good.
And I would go and change your passwords, and I'm probably going to change my credit card as well, just to be doubly sure. And it's just because I've lost money in the past.
Yeah.
And I'm quite paranoid about things like that, and I'm just very disappointed, actually.
Yeah. It's a hassle that you can really do without, isn't it?
You've got to have a certain level of trust. I know you've got to look after yourself online, and everybody tells you you need to be careful, but you expect these services. And I know we're all very cavalier with certain things when it comes to ID. And this just shows you when something on this scale, I mean, that's 100 million user accounts now.
But if I wasn't going to trust someone, it wouldn't be Sony that I'd consider not to be trustworthy, you know?
No.
And now it kind of questions that, doesn't it? So.
And if you question Sony, you should be quite rightly questioning everyone. Apple, Google, Microsoft, all the big companies. Yeah. This is a big, major, you know, tech company, and they've goofed.
In other Sony news, they are releasing some tablets. They've announced two tablets, the S1, which is a 9.4-inch screen tablet, and an S2, which is a dual-screen tablet. I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of a long... Imagine the Nintendo DS that you've stretched, and that's kind of what it looks like, isn't it?
It looked like the Microsoft Courier that they demoed a year and a half ago.
Although Courier was a sort of more of a book shape, this one's sort of more landscape, isn't it?
But you know what I mean. It's still that kind of foldy two thing.
Yeah. So interesting to see what they're going to do with that. Both on Android platforms, using their kind of PlayStation downloadable game. Thing that they did.
And I thought that was the most interesting thing, that they weren't Windows. They're Android.
They've clearly invested in Android, haven't they? So keep it going, basically. It's an easy thing now to come up with lots of different, device form factors, because, you know, once you get an Android, you can go anywhere. So that was our other Sony news. But another big news story, which may not be as big as we think, but is an interesting one anyway, is... the iPhone was announced as being tracking. Well, it's been tracking your data. That's how it all broke. It stores a file on your phone, which effectively tracks where your phone has been, and it can store up to a year's worth of data.
Well, the interesting thing is it's stored in a file on your desktop, and it's not a year's worth of data. I mean, I think I've maybe written in there could be a year's worth of data, because it started when iOS 4 came out. But it's ongoing, and it also changes between devices. So if I got a new phone, in between there, it would back it up and still maintain that database. So, but just I'll roll it back a bit. It's a database of cell towers and Wi-Fi locations.
That's it. Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily tracking, you know, that I was on this particular street, and in this particular location. It was just saying that I have connected to a cell tower or a Wi-Fi.
I can hear a cell tower, effectively, isn't it?
Yes,
yeah, I can see, hear, you know, all those kind of things.
So and it was all about Apple kicking. Apple was trying to crowdsource a location database. That's the kind of route.
In a very similar way to the Google cars went round and listened out for cell towers and positioning beacons. So they're doing it with their phones, and it's getting stored in a file, and that file is then going effectively being fed back to Apple, who then use that data to allow phones to pick up their location quicker. And that's what they've come back and said. It's not actually tracking you.
No, and one interesting point, it does go back to Apple, but it doesn't go back to Apple to saying it's you or saying it's your device either.
No, but there are...
So all it's reporting back is that here's things I found.
Yes, but there are... I mean, if you live in London, that ain't an issue. You know, there are millions of people with millions of iPhones. You live... you know, in a remote place with...
Like Barrow.
There's, you know, it's... I don't know.
Well, Barrow's remote. Everybody's got six fingers. They're all inbreds.
And if one of them had an iPhone and there was a, therefore tracking data up...
He'd be great at touch typing.
He could do multi-touch things that we can even imagine.
Honestly, see everybody from Barrow, great snooker players, and it's just because they've got such a strong bridge they can make with their hands. It's fantastic.
Anyway. Right, so, but yeah, so it's when numbers get low, things like that, kind of tracking information, become, they're by design not anonymous anymore, you know? And okay, the situation isn't like that, but effectively they're saying, well, we don't track you because all we're doing is saying... These are cell phones. Well, cell phone towers or whatever. But actually, that is a form of tracking because it does track you.
So, and you can see it. There was an app. So the guys that researched this actually brought an app out called iPhone Tracker. So if you go to petewarden.github.com/iPhone Tracker, you can download the app and fire it up on your iMac. On your Mac, and it will actually visualize the data. And at first, it looks like everything's in like a grid format. And I really should have put the pictures up in Flickr. And I was quite interested. It was like, oh, cool. This is great. I found it all quite interesting, just what it was picking up on and randomly which towers it was connecting to as I went on journeys. And you could, first of all, it defaulted to showing you everything, but then you could move a slider to show you different days. And it was like, yeah, oh, okay. I can see the West Highland Waywalk and see all these random... Like, I've connected to something miles away, but obviously that's been like, oh, I found a signal and there's not many towers around.
So that's not that tracking you yet, it gives you data to track you.
Because there's dates and times against when it's found that cell tower. You know, so I'm guessing that's all around, I found it today, but somebody in the same area hasn't found it tomorrow, the next day, and the next day. So maybe that's old data and it's now switched off. So I guess that's how they keep their database live.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And at first I thought, well, all the cell towers are on a grid, because all you see is a perfect grid of dots that you see. But it's actually the researchers and the guys who wrote the software decided to not be very specific about what dots they were showing. It's very detailed in the data file on your Mac, but they've said let's make it less creepy, and yeah. we'll go to this grid format. Interestingly, Android captures much the same. So that came out a couple of days later. Very similar. I think the big difference was that Android gives you an option, a very easy option to toggle in and out. You know, so you can say you can opt in or you can turn it off if you don't want to.
So here's the dilemma. From a user's point of view, it's much easier and much more straightforward just to do this in the background. Don't need to let the users know because they get a better performance out of it. You don't have to have an annoying tick box that says, do you really want to do this, and have to make the user understand what that means and why it's good for them. Yet that is, so it's, you know, from a user's point of view, it's better not to have that tick box, but actually from the company's point of view, it's better a user experience if you don't have that yet. Yeah. it is a better for everyone if that tick box is offered somewhere at least, and you're aware of it.
I think Android have done the right thing. You know, there's an option. You can, if you feel uncomfortable, turn it off.
There you go. And that's problem solved, but it does then come with all the problems that you have with Android, which is that it's complicated. Well, it's not complicated, but it's more initially more complicated than an iOS device.
Yes.
I mean, they do the same thing with traffic data. And I know Apple have just admitted that they're doing that as well. So Android collects your movements while you're in the car using your navigation software to analyze road conditions. And therefore, they can offer that as crowdsourced data, which then that you can route around, which is incredibly useful.
Yes,
you can tell ahead of time, you know, what your journey time is going to be.
It was interesting that, I mean, Apple took this very seriously. They first of all put an official response to it.
Probably the quickest Apple response I've ever seen.
Yeah. And then Steve Jobs, Phil Schiller, Scott Forstall did actual interviews with the press, admitted how it worked. They also were comfortable with how it was doing it, but they also admitted there was bugs in that the way it was...
I didn't like
the way, well, it was the way... What they said was the way it was building up over time, that shouldn't have been happening, and that was an actual bug, and they were going to release an update that would fix that bug.
But they did the same thing with the, you know, the signal, you know, oh, we're showing you too many bars on the screen. That's a bug. And I guess that's what Google said. You know, we're collecting all this data and accidentally storing it in a database and keeping it back to us. Oh, it's a bug.
I never felt comfortable with the idea of a bug round about the signal thing. It always was a bit, this one, it feels like, you know, no, we shouldn't have been capturing this. It's something that's just, you know, slipped through the cracks. I can see that happening.
I can see it happening. It's just a convenient excuse, though, isn't it?
Yeah. And actually, I mean, this was on the 27th. They did a lot of interviews, so that was just last week, and said that in the next few weeks, Apple will release a free iOS update. Well, obviously, because they all are, which would reduce the size, because seemingly it was size limited, and they'd picked a figure of 5 meg. But when you look at the, you know, if it's just text data, 5 megs actually a lot of data.
That is an incredible amount, yeah. We forget how much that is, really.
Exactly. If I pass a 5 meg, you know, just text file at work, it can be a lot of data. So they're going to reduce the size of that database that's getting cached. They'll cease backing this up and delete the cache entirely when you turn location services off. And that update's actually come out now, so I think about an hour ago, just before we started on this merry podcast, Inverness. that's now out, and the update it just says it's improving the way iPhones and iPads handle location tracking database stored on device by making it smaller and encrypted. Location database will no longer be backed up to iTunes and will be deleted entirely when your location services are turned off.
There's another thing that I quite like about this is the fact that it's made it easily onto mainstream news and media, and it will just keep companies on their toes, keep them on the ball and keep them looking out for these things, because this is important stuff and the news and the media at large has picked up on that.
Well, which is good. I think it's a byproduct of things like the iPad gets launched and you get massive queues and it makes BBC News headlines, you know, it's the second or third story. Hence, when something like this does come out, people have got to understand it. It's the same with PS3. You know, it's like, I don't think it's acceptable now for somebody to have a PS3 and then just go, oh, I don't really understand what that means. You know, and, oh, there's a hack. Oh, does that affect me? Oh, well, you need to be educated. You need to understand this.
People are taking more account. I mean, it's just positive in general, I think. And it's good that it's got caught. So, good news.
Listen to Digital Outbox. We'll keep you. We'll guide you through the
We're ahead of curve.
Right, that's half an hour gone, yeah. And that's our second story.
So, Apple have finally announced their white iPhone. They've actually released it. No, it's not. Yes, it is. It's actually out in the world.
It's out. Came out on April 28th. 28th. 9 months after the black iPhone. It was challenging, Apple Senior Vice President Phil Schiller said. It's not as simple as making something white. Well, there you go.
That's such an Apple statement, isn't it? Such an Apple, because it is. And in fact, it does say something about Apple, the fact that most other manufacturers would have just released a white version of it, be done with it, don't care if it screws up. And actually, they kind of said no.
The best bit, also, like fair-skinned humans, white iPhones need a little more UV protection from the sun. And it's like, nobody's going to have it after 18 months, you know, and it's...
It shows, anyway. In one way, it shows how much they, you know...
They're an engineering company.
Yeah.
They're an engineering company.
They're an engineering perfection company, is what they're aiming for.
But also, how much was this a filler? Because they are coming out and saying there's no iPhone till the autumn. So how much of this was a filler just to... I couldn't believe there's people queuing.
It's a very convenient timing, just like it's very convenient timing that they found Asama.
Oh, that was class. We'll come on to that later. That was class.
So basically, if you want a white one, you can get it, and that'll keep you interested, ready for, what do you reckon, August for the new iPhone announcement?
September.
So around August, September time.
Yeah.
We'll know about the iPhone 5.
I think we'll see it. They'll usually do an announcement in September of new iPods.
However, we're not short of new device or new product launches, because we have got the new iMacs. I say the new iMacs, they've got a couple more ports, but effectively they look relatively similar as the last ones. Hopefully they won't have cracked screens, which will be nice. So the Macs have the new Sandy Bridge processor, which I guess you can read as just fast. It's got the two new Thunderbolt ports. Sorry, two ports on the 27-inch model.
Thunderbolt!
So that's kind of your USB 2, sorry, 3 replacement. So high speed transfer between
devices.
Craps
all over USB 3. But there's no devices you can buy for it. So, exactly. So it's all about pointless.
So it doesn't quite crap over it. It's just another proprietary port. FaceTime HD. So the actual cameras on board these are going to be 720p cameras.
Yeah.
Which is nice, widescreen. And they've whacked in some nice powerful graphics chips. From AMD with plenty of graphics RAM, and you can actually output two external screens on the big model, so you can have three screens of Apple loveliness.
Yes,
you can have 16
and I mean a 27-inch screen. I think is it 2,500 by 1,500 pixels.
It's huge.
You know, so you're looking at you know, what's that, 7,500?
It's massive.
Yeah.
And 16 gig of RAM is up to 16 gig of RAM. Basically, you can, the first spec you can pick it up at is basically a grand.
It's a grand, and it's a pretty decent machine.
And you know, you wouldn't sniff at it. It's full HD.
It's 21.5 inch.
Yep. 21 inch monitor, which is huge in its own right. So full HD, you've got basically 4 gig of memory, half terabyte of hard disk. And a decent graphics card. For a grand.
I think the grand machines, I think, are very competitively priced when you look at what you get.
This is the if you want an Apple, these things are the best value you can buy.
Well, it depends how you configure it, or whether you define it as decent value. So
no, the reason you're saying that is because you have been through this process several times, right? Because you've been going through the configurator.
So last night. Yeah. I worked out I'm going to spend $2,500.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Because I'm going to put an SSD on it.
And that does whack up the price quite considerably.
And because everybody on Twitter who loves SSDs say they fail once a year, I've also added on the 3-year warranty on top of the year warranty.
Yeah.
And I think that'll pay for itself. It's only 130 quid or 140 quid.
The cost of your super machine that you are going to place an order for, I guess, very shortly. In a very excited manner in your
snigger Inverness.
You're almost going to explode, I think, today.
Oh, that's later.
No. So let's put this in perspective. Your top end machine, which is going to be huge and hugely powerful, is it's only the cost of a top end Mac laptop, you know. So it's, if you put it in that perspective, it's still good value.
Absolutely.
But the grand machines are especially good value, really. Yes. If you're willing to just, you know, take always. That lower spec, it's like a sweetie stall, though, isn't it? You just always get enticed to the next bit.
Yes, and a couple of things to bear in mind. You add an SSD, and it adds 4 to 6 weeks to shipping.
Yes, which is a bit ridiculous.
which is annoying. And also, you can add RAM. Don't. Just take the default, because it comes with 4 gig, the one I was looking at, and to add another 4 gig on, you're looking at 160 quid. And I thought, oh, that's not bad. Oh, it is expensive. I went to Crucial last night. It's £60 to buy the same.
Yeah. So it'll be the same stuff. Okay, it won't have an Apple on it, but it will. Yeah,
in fact, I think it was 8 gig was £60. So I think I could, for the £160, I could max it out at 16 gig.
Which would be nice.
It would be superb. So I have a couple of things to sort out, like finding a student. Yes. Once I find a poor student somewhere, I'll be making my order.
You should put out an email campaign to people. You know, my name is Ian.
I think I get locked
I'm
up.
I'm looking for your bank account details.
Yeah, please send photos. wrong.
So anyway, yes. So they're out and they're about. And if you're interested in a Mac. I'm sure, if you're interested in Apple, I'm sure you've already have a look anyway.
I've now got Watch Out Beatles About in my head. But I'm thinking he died. So it's maybe not the best thing to dwell on. Anyway.
Dwarf hand man. We have had an announcement from... is it a publisher? I'm just trying to...
Wall Street Journal. So I'll do this very quickly.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
We've talked about... digital magazines and you know, digital books and all that kind of electronic books.
And how they're a bit poo.
They're a bit poo, and you have to pay twice for it, you know, because there's still no subscription options, and Apple have tried with their subscription option, but people aren't happy because it's 30% and all that kind of stuff. Well, that kind of disappeared, but I'm sure as we get near June and the deadlines for that kind of change, it'll come up again. Time, and this is only America at the moment, but they're the largest magazine publisher. They've reached a deal with Apple. So if you're a current print subscriber, then the iPad editions are now all free. So starting from 2 days ago, Monday, subscribers to Sports Illustrated, Time and Fortune magazines can access the iPad editions via the apps, and they can authenticate as subscribers via their current details. So they've actually updated the apps to make that happen. And I think things like that are going to start to make people switch. I mean, I subscribe to Wired right now, and I'd love to just be say, well, I don't want the paper one, I want the electronic one, but it's going to cost me double the price. Because the paper one costs £2 and the electronic one's £4.
Yeah.
So,
A help out me. T.
Yeah, help me. Help me help you.
Indeed. But also, we've had an announcement of a new way of publishing books. There's a platform out there, Pushpop Press. Basically, have launched an application which enables, will be a suite of applications which enables anyone to make a interactive publication. Relatively straightforward, and then publish it onto the App Store. And Al Gore is the first one to have released a product on this.
Yes.
His book, what's this called? Our Choice.
Our Choice.
There we go. $2.99.
I'm sure this is going to end up being an equivalent to the Adobe. Or did I agree it was Adobe?
It's Adobe.
Can't remember. Adobe. I'm sure you just change that every couple of weeks just to confuse me.
No, it's all in your head.
So Adobe are doing something similar where you can take your magazine and publish on iOS and any other device. These are two ex-Apple employees, Mike Matas and I can't pronounce the other one, so I'm not going to. But he's the front foot. So he did a TED talk the other day that was published. The apps themselves are very nicely done. Sorry, this first app is very nicely done.
It's nice and slick. So you basically swipe between chapters on the big bit at the top, and it sort of gives you a nice big preview. You've got the actual pages at the bottom, which you slide
exactly.
Through,
and the way you watch media and the pinch is done really well, and it's the interactive bits are done really well. And I've actually thought about how can we take best advantage of the platform, not just how do we get our content on there and give people a page turn. You know, they've actually thought about how do we take that platform forward. I thought it was one of the best attempts so far at a digital book.
Yeah,
really nice.
I still think there's a place for just a standard page turner, an easy way of converting your, you know, the file that you use to create the print one and publish.
If I'm getting, I don't know, let's think of a title. Even if I'm just getting like the Times every week, I don't expect them to turn that into this kind of thing.
Well, they wouldn't be able to.
No, but I don't expect that.
I guess if you take something like the BBC website, they obviously have interactive videos already and stuff. I mean, they have no need to put it on an app because they've got their website out there, really. But say they're saying this platform isn't really in competition with Adobe. Adobe are going to probably go after the big publishers. They're after the small houses, looking for a nice, easy way to put their products up. It's going to be a nice, cheap application, as I say. And they're also saying it's not really a custom thing. It all looks nice and slick on Al Gore's book because it's new. But I imagine 10 books in, it's all going to look very samey, basically.
But that's
the idea of it. And
but then content should win.
That's exactly what it does, because the interface is very nice, very slick, and is natural to the device it's on. The interface itself will disappear into the background, and you'll know straight away whether the content is actually any good.
Yes.
So that's all good. We have had Spotify some updates. They are sort of stamping on iTunes a little bit with their latest update,
which
integrates fully with the iOS devices. And I don't know the full story behind this, but effectively you can now automatically download all of playlist and buy, or effectively purchase and download, and then that will sync onto your device, and you can listen to it on any of your iOS devices.
Yep. And they're bringing this new concept of MP3 bundles, so you can buy 10 songs for roughly £8 or 100 songs for £50, which seems to be all right value, you know, pretty much the same as anywhere else. I think the big thing is it's the syncing desktop tracks from mobile devices, and that's whether it's iPods, iPhones or Android devices. And the interesting thing is it's not even through a cable, it's Wi-Fi.
Which is has one up your iTunes, basically.
Yes, yeah. So looks like a strong update. And we've covered Spotify before, and I've stopped using it, but this looks like a good addition if you're a Spotify fan.
It would have to be a very, very good playlist for you to see a playlist and think, playlist of 100 songs, yeah, I'll just spend £50, whatever. You're not going to do it.
No.
I mean, Spotify have had to change their model because blah, blah, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But
what was compelling about Spotify was you could listen to the songs.
I know. And the more obviously, that the music industry... Exactly. Because they've offered something that everybody loved, and the industry's over time said, yeah, we don't really like it. And if you want to keep going, you're going to have to change.
But again, devil's advocate, the industry's struggling as well in their own little way. But there we go. More crowdsourcing. TomTom this time.
Evil TomTom.
So TomTom have admitted that is it Denmark?
Holland.
In Holland, they have sold TomTom crowdsourced data. So this is locations of their devices to local police, with the view that they were hoping the police were going to help ease congestion, use it for road planning, stop bottlenecks and things like that. But actually, the police did what the police do, and they used it to find out where the best places to put their mobile cameras were and catch people speeding.
Yes.
Basically, users of TomTom are not very happy that they have been used in this way.
No.
As you might expect.
And so the CEO has come out and said that the tracking's voluntary and you can opt out, but it's... I think it's the same with the Apple products and with Sony. How many people are aware of these things? You know, you plug in your TomTom, you put in a location, you go, and you think, oh, nice, pretty graphics, and it got me there reliably. The last thing you think about is crowdsourcing data.
Did it say, we will sell this information to the police? It probably didn't.
Also, I mean, are police that involved in working out congestion and where to build new roads?
No, they would be involved in safety, but their biggest safety push would be by putting speed cameras out there, I guess.
Where can we make the money?
Yeah, that, and you can understand why TomTom would sell that data effectively to them, because they're making money as well.
Absolutely.
But now it's out there, they're going to suffer.
They must be suffering already. I mean, who's going to go and buy a TomTom device now? Surely.
I think you'd be surprised. I think people won't care. In fact, there'd be a lot of people out there that would say, well, that's a good thing.
Luddites.
Amazon Cloud suffered a big outage in one of their regions.
Weeks ago.
It does feel like a long time ago, although everyone's still recovering from it.
Yes.
And it affected some really big services out there. I mean, we've talked about Amazon services before and how large and all-encompassing they are.
And it's how widespread they're used. Any startup basically jumps on it because of price and scalability. It's easy to scale.
It's a no-brainer. But effectively, people are... Well, we'll come on to the effects of it. But it's knocked out people like Foursquare. Is that Quora? Is that how you say it? Reddit. Yeah. Basically... It's people who were in the, you know, they'd put their instances on the region that got knocked out, got affected most. And basically people have come along and said, you know, this is the downside of the cloud. You know, once it goes, it's all gone. But as people have pointed out since, really, it's people not taking responsibility for making sure that they have used the services correctly.
Yep.
And services which were multi-region, multi-country, the cloud did what it was supposed to do, which was balance the services across those regions, and therefore people may have noticed slightly reduced performance, but actually the service didn't disappear.
No,
so I think there's a lot of lessons learned from people.
There is, and there's some great posts that we'll put in the show notes, and it's the two extremes. So if you looked at the Amazon.com thread round about the outage. There was one particular company, and you don't see the company name, but he first of all put in, he'd raised a support call. So I guess they've got some support agreement. You know, they've got hundreds of users or whatever. But his quote was, "Life of our patients is at stake. I am desperately asking you to contact. We are a monitoring company and are monitoring hundreds of cardiac patients at home. We are unable to see their ECG signals since 21st of April." And you're reading that and going, oh my goodness.
I mean, that's dead serious stuff.
And then they're saying, not restored, not heard from Amazon. People out there, please take a look at our volumes. This not just some social network website issue, but a serious threat to people's lives. And it went on and people were saying, well, where's your fallback? You can't just rely on Amazon to be, you know, and you could turn around and say, well, where's Amazon's fallback? But you've got to have some responsibility yourself if you're selling a service. And later on, the same user says, it wasn't that bad and we had fallbacks. And it's like, well, why did you put that in the first place? You've either lied about it to get Amazon to do something, or you realise that people are aghast that you're relying on a cloud solution to monitor, you know, cardiac patients at home.
But I'd say, I don't think you should say, we shouldn't be derogatory towards the cloud. It definitely is. But it's people figuring out, and the hard way in this case, that they still have responsibility to use the services as they're supposed to be used, which is spread risk.
For me, it still blows my mind to kind of do a kind of daft quote that, if me and you had an idea right now and we could get the domain name sorted, which
the
is probably
name.
The difference. Exactly. See, Inverness.
We should sell that as a domain, the name.
But if you could get that within a day, you know, you can have you can be up and running, you can be starting to code, you can have a server behind it that is scalable, you can have storage that's scalable.
You can cope from between 1 and 1 million users without any issue. It's not like, you know, you have to.
It's scary how you can set that up, and even 3-4 years ago that would have been difficult.
Yep.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So basically, you know, there's a lesson. Basically, it's the lesson there, isn't there?
Yeah.
But Amazon have to say, you know, again, people found it hard to get in contact. And that's
communication was poor. Communication was poor. And Amazon eventually did a long post explaining what actually went wrong. And they've committed to improve communication, speed up recovery, make it easier to use multiple availability zones. So spreading that risk.
Yeah, I have confidence they will do that, yet it's still poor that, you know, that people weren't able to get a response from someone or something.
Absolutely. Communication's key. And you only know how good your company is, you know, whether it's we use DreamHost for Digital Outbox or whoever you use for your hosting, you only know how good it is when you need help.
Absolutely. And,
you know, and that's the key test.
And it's help at crisis times that you really want to know that support's there.
Yep. And a great post in the show notes from SmugMug, which is a great photo sharing site, and they heavily rely on Amazon, but they survived it, and they put in how they survived it and what they'd done to make it, you know, scalable, and also the fallback measures they had in place. So that was an excellent post, actually, very informative.
Another cloud service, Dropbox. massively growing with users. They've got 25 million users now. They've got 200 million files which are being saved every day into the service. Another service which uses Amazon, pretty much flat out. But there are now concerns about some of their security measures. Now that it's becoming more and more widely used, people are obviously being more and more questioning about what's happening to this data.
And they made a drastic change, but a change to their T's and C's, that if I still handed it over to the US government, and they'll remove the Dropbox encryption before doing so as well. So they won't just say there's the data and it's our encryption and nay luck because somebody's using it. They'll actually whip that off and say there's the files, US authorities. And they're saying they're having to do that.
Yeah, I think the US are very strong on that front.
Yep.
Especially if you encrypt something, it has to be available unencrypted. So they're probably tied.
Yeah, and one concern came out from Derek Newton. So again, apologies, but the link's a bit too long to read out, so it's in the show notes. He had done an analysis on how a lot of these cloud syncing services were working. And what he found was there was a config.db file, and this was the main file that stored the Dropbox client security details. That file was actually portable. It's not tied to the system that it's getting hosted on, like my Mac or my PC at work or whatever. So if I could actually get hold of your config.db file, I could move it on to, so if I somehow got your file, Chris, I could move on to my machine.
Yeah, my files.
I could make a small amount of changes just to pass statements so Dropbox would launch properly, but it would then sync your Dropbox folder to my computer. It wouldn't notify you that syncing had done, and it wouldn't prompt for any passwords or usernames because they're all held in that config.db file.
Yep. So effectively, you can grab the contents of my Dropbox.
Yes.
It depends where config.db is, where how secure it is, but you would say that's a relative risk.
if I have access to your system, I can grab it.
Yeah.
You know, and so how many people could access your system? You know, so it's... And I think the thing is, there's a lot of services. I don't know what it's like in Android. A lot of applications, particularly the kind of... ones where you're creating content, they're now starting to introduce Dropbox syncing. So rather than having everybody, when iPad came out, oh, there's no hard drive. And it's like, well, add in Dropbox syncing and you've got your cloud hard drive.
Yep.
And so many have done that, and it makes it so easy, So, I mentioned DApp in the last podcast for doing, a little journal. It's ideal because I have it on, my iPad, the iPhone, and I have it on my desktop, and all I need to do is zap in my Dropbox details, and I've got it syncing everywhere. It's great. It's such a great option for them. It's kind of hard to move away. Box.net's an alternative. For all I know, it works the exact same way. And one other one that's getting a lot of press just now is one called Wuala, W-U-A-L-A, and this is from Lacey. I'm assuming is how all these things are pronounced.
Yeah, that Lacey's right. Yep.
And kind of similar setup to Dropbox, but something they do is the prices are slightly cheaper, but also if you're willing to give up space in your hard drive for other people to store content on it, and it's all done, it's all encrypted, and it's all scattered, so you don't get, I won't get all your files. But if you're happy to do that, if you say there's 100 gig, for example, on a Mac or a PC, and if it's connected to the network 70% of the day, then they'll free up 70 gig as cloud disk for you to use.
Who's going to do that? I'd never do that.
I think a lot of people will.
Why?
Why not?
I guess it's an easy way of, getting storage or whatever, but it's...
Yeah.
I would never do that, I don't think.
Yeah, and well, I think people will, just because they'll look at it as I can get a cloud drive with a lot of space on it for free. I'll do that.
You're spending all day not, having buffering video or whatever just because someone...
Oh, and that would be my worry, because I want to know what's using my network.
Yeah,
I don't want somebody else, I don't want it to be like, oh, Joe Bloggs is uploading some video to it and
I hate it when my computer stops doing stuff or slows down for no apparent reason and then
or when it crashes when we're doing a podcast over Skype.
No, I would never do that.
No, seamless viewers, listeners. I'm taking cramp.
And another bit of stuff, we had SugarSync as a pick, didn't we, I think, before now, and that does the same kind of thing.
Is SugarSync the one where you can set it up to do syncing with your friends as well?
SugarSync was the one. I'm not sure. But you can. I think it's Dropbox plus the fact that you don't have to have it in a magic briefcase. You can sync any file on anywhere on your hard disk, basically. And it gave you more space off the bat. Anyway, that was one thing we've covered before.
CrashPlan was the one I was thinking about.
Okay, let's keep this moving along because we're still not at the end yet. We've still got a bit to go.
No, so if you're interested in backup and stuff like that, CrashPlan's one to look at because you can actually, if you're wanting to sync, now if I wanted to sync some of my stuff to your machine and you wanted to do it to my machine, you can do that for free.
There you go.
So it gives you like a, almost like off-site storage as long as you've got two people that are willing to give up a bit of disk space to each other, which is an interesting approach as well.
How did this file get here, sir? Chris put it there.
Anyway.
30% of YouTube videos are now WebM encoded. So WebM was the technology that YouTube bought and open sourced. And they are now saying that 30% has been... Any new videos are basically converted to WebM. And 30% of their back catalogue have also been converted. Now, 30% doesn't necessarily sound like a lot, but seeing
sounds pretty low.
I mean, it is an awful lot, but obviously 70% of what's on YouTube is just people taking random videos of their cat, so they're not really that important. And actually, so 30% of the videos on YouTube count for 99% of the views. So that's pretty much anything that's big on YouTube will be WebM.
Yes. I'd put a link in the show notes. They also announced on the same day as this announcement, they'd also talked about a WebM community cross-license initiative. And I was like, I thought this was open source. But seemingly what this is about is to try and protect future users from patent threats, as in me and you as users using WebM. So this was a cross-community initiative, a whole lot of big companies, and I think what they're trying to do is to say if somebody wants to go and chase after us, then chase after this group, and they'll look after the any patent claims in the future, I think.
Yeah, so there's still, say with WebM, there's still the worry, it's a technology that someone said they copied a bit of the technology that was already out there, whatever. It doesn't really matter what's going to happen. But basically, I think, like you say, Google are just trying to make WebM in the future, this future open standard that anyone can use for their videos and technology. So, because that's the other thing about this. It's not just about the actual videos being encoded. It's about the players being able to play the videos. So that's the idea. Anyway, so that's what they've done. And they are moving up a pace. I imagine 30% of their video library is just stupid amounts of hours.
It must be mind-boggling. Yeah. The data that gets uploaded, and to think they're uploading and encoding it into
transcoding data is just it can take up your machine for hours. So
it's a transcoding, the fact that they can also analyze all the audio, do all the kind of you've used a certain chunk of audio from a certain song, so we're going
to put an advert on it, or you'll have to get rid of that song.
And it's happening all so quick. It's just mind-blowing.
I just cannot imagine. I bet they're not blue screening. Right, Google Docs app for Android now.
Over to you, Android fan.
Having not actually got Google Docs properly running on my Android, for reasons that I haven't really used my Android phone for ages, I don't know much about this.
I'll rattle through the features.
Okay, thank you.
So you can filter and search for your content. You can jump straight into editing docs using the mobile editors. You can share content very quickly. It also does OCR. So if you take a photo with text on it, it will try and convert it to editable text.
Nice.
It struggles with handwriting in some fonts, but as with most things with Google, they expect to get better over time.
By crowdsourcing.
the people that are...
Google's tracking what you've written.
I think the site that I'd certainly had the review on, they said it was a very very usable app. So
The apps that you access them, there are desktop apps. What am I talking about? There are, phone apps that you can use for the things like their mail or whatever, but their web-based mobile apps are very, very good, and in fact, probably better. And as we've talked about before, that's probably the future, and you can see them doing that. So I will probably be able to just use Google Docs by just going to a URL, you know, and that'll be me done. You don't have to actually have an application or anything.
The second app that came out was Video Chat. So Google Talk with video and voice chat for Android phones. It was already available on tablet devices, but it wasn't actually available on phones until now. And it just, I guess, very, very similar to any other video chats. You can make calls over 3G, 4G data network if your carrier supports it, or over Wi-Fi. You can video, you can voice chat with any of your Google Talk friends list. So initially they're rolling it out to Nexus S devices as part of the Android 2.3.4 over-the-air update, and it will launch on other Android 2.3 plus devices in the future.
Yeah, I mean, 2.3 is obviously the latest devices, basically, and not even all the latest still have them. So
no,
it's fairly exclusive at the moment, but that shows the direction, and that's one of the reasons why I got my Nexus S. It's because of these kind of things.
Yes. So it looks like two very, very good updates, and they're both free.
And I'd say one thing I meant to mention was, you see updates in the actual web applications on desktop as well, you know, all the time. The little boxes pop up saying you can do this now, you can do this now. And just gradually and step by step, it's becoming more and more and more of an application rather than a website. It's amazing.
And I'll say it again, Chrome is just the best by far for me. Yeah. Loving Chrome.
If you haven't used Chrome or you don't use Chrome, then you are missing out.
Yeah, give it a try. I just find everything, and I'm talking on Mac and PC. I just find both of them. I just find that the best browser by far at the moment.
Indeedy. Okay, Delicious have been acquired. Two people have bought Delicious, or have acquired it into their new company called.
Not just two people, because two people could be me and you. You know, could it could be,
and that wouldn't be exciting at all.
Ian and Chris have bought Delicious, and what the hell are they going to do with that? No, this is Chad Hurley and Steve Chen, the founders of YouTube.
So this is these are the guys that built YouTube, and then Google bought YouTube off of them.
Yep.
For I think horrendous amounts of money, wasn't it?
Some billions
we were talking about, weren't we? So they've now decided that Delicious is going to form part of what they're now doing. So obviously that's going to cause an awful lot of interest.
They've got a new internet company called Avos. Avos, who knows?
Avos.
So, Yahoo said that they were the guys they felt most comfortable selling it to. They've not disclosed the price. And if you go to delicious.com, the first time you log in since this sale has taken place, and it's not moved yet, but you can click to say, yeah, I'll move when I'm happy to move over. There's some concern that the terms and conditions are a lot different.
Yes, they pinged an email to all existing users letting them know that this was happening and that they had to opt into this. So if they didn't opt in within a certain time, I don't know what that time is, then your account is effectively deleted.
Yeah.
Again, that's the right way to do it.
And there's some concern that the Delicious terms and conditions, basically you can store any link you like. Certainly in Avis ones, they're talking about you can store links, however, they have to be, you know, decent and, you know, no shady content and a few other bits and pieces that we're talking about in the terms and conditions that people are a bit uncomfortable with. It's like,
and
it's a bookmarking site.
It probably means that they're going to use those links for some other purpose.
Yes, that was my worry. So I've signed up to it, but I'm using Pinboard, and I paid for Pinboard and I'm loving it. So there you go.
So Twitter got there first.
Yes, always does. This isn't really news now.
No, so Twitter basically broke Osama bin Laden, the raid on his... Oh, sorry.
How did you find out?
I can't remember now. I think I just flicked on the news on the TV.
and for me, it was Twitter. But that's just because I wake up in the morning and I generally, you know, fired up Twitter.
Could have been Twitter, you know. I can't remember. All I thought was it's handy timing for Mr. Obama.
Get it right, because Fox News couldn't get it right, BBC couldn't get it right, yeah. Telegraph couldn't get it right. How many people got Osama and Obama mixed up?
Yeah, there's a fantastic. I did see that on Twitter. The fantastic mix-ups of the namings. It's
I thought it was all like, I think they were, I thought they were all falsified. You're like, no, it's not. And it was actually the video of the Fox guy who was talking about Osama bin Laden. And it just, a few of us are just tuning in, just to reiterate, President Obama has been killed. and he just kept going. And the newscaster next to him looked around and went, Osama. And he went, yes, Osama bin Laden has been killed. And I was just like, is that what you want?
With Fox, you can never trust them 2 seconds.
You never
they're
know.
Like the Daily Mail of the American the best, world, aren't they?
The best bit was Obama the night before had, I think it's like the correspondence dinner, they call it. It happens every year.
And, oh, yes.
And the president has to, he does his 15-minute roasting of people. And I loved it because he was ripped into himself as well about his poll ratings and stuff, and he ripped into a few other bits and pieces, and then he ripped into Donald Trump and absolutely just
who
just,
deserves an absolute pasting.
Just needs a good Roger in that guy.
Rug boy needs.
it just needs shooting, honestly. And the thing was, he did all that, and I think it was one of the Saturday Night Live guys was also doing the main comedy bit. And he made a joke about Osama bin Laden and went, where's he? He's in some crazy cave somewhere. We'll probably find out he's in such and such. And Obama was laughing. And I just thought, hold on, you're laughing and you know what's going down. How amazing is that? And somebody put up a tweet saying, I was watching that video and he's done that roasting and he's looking around thinking, I'm going to own all you guys tomorrow night and you know nothing about it.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, anyway, very convenient timing, wasn't it?
And we've not even mentioned the main point of the story, which was Twitter. Twitter brought the news. So Keith Urban, who was an ex-Bush staffer, he brought the news. It was retweeted thousands of times, and it was then finally confirmed. People at first were really worried because it was like, you know, President of the United States is going to do a live broadcast at some bizarre time. And people were like, oh, bloody hell, this is war. Something's gone wrong.
North Korea's gone wrong, yeah.
Yes, and it turned out it was this. But the bit that amazed me was there was two guys in Pakistan who live tweeted the events, not realizing it was Osama bin Laden getting shot, that they were live tweeting.
I think you have to be a bit careful on what you call breaking the news or whatever. I mean, I think we talked before, there's a massive difference between someone speculative tweeting.
And that's all it was. All it was and his Twitter handle was really virtual. And all he was doing was saying, oh, there's a massive, you know, there's a massive bang and I hope everything's okay here. And there's two helicopters and there seems to be a helicopter crash as well. And I'm hearing they're not, you know, Pakistani helicopters and don't know what's going on. And it was just these kind of, and then somebody else kind of confirming the same thing. So it wasn't, they didn't bait the news. And Keith Urban, I mean, he seems to be the first guy on Twitter that said it. You know, that I'm hearing it's Osama bin Laden that's been killed. And yes, he's kind of broke it, but until somebody stands up, I mean, it was only when Wall Street Journal and a few other places said, yes, yep, we're hearing the same, that people were like, oh, right, okay, Osama bin Laden has been shot.
It's like saying that all the blogs break all of Apple News, you know, because effectively they scattergun. they say enough that they're bound to be right somewhere along the way. But that's pretty much the same as Twitter. I mean, it's almost easier to see the kind of things after the events have happened rather than as they're happening. I think that's fair to say.
And I think that what highlighted it was a Martin Luther King quote getting retweeted hundreds of times on Monday.
Yes.
And it was all about celebrating, don't celebrate an enemy's death and stuff like that. He never said it, but everybody just took it as gospel. And I think that highlighted the danger of something like Twitter. Don't always believe what you see.
Yeah, it wasn't anything to do with him yet.
But it's the same health warning. If you read the Daily Mail, you can't believe what you read. You know, so there's no difference. There is absolutely no difference.
I would say that Twitter's far better than Daily Mail.
Shaku was like, he said, have you tried Daily Mail app and the iPad? It's fantastic. And I went, oh yeah, it gets great reviews. But it's right-wing Tory trash. I ain't buying it, and I ain't going to use it. Sorry. Oh, Inverness, come on. I won't let the Daily Mail bring me down tonight.
Nintendo have announced disappointing 3DS sales. They wanted to sell 4 million, and that was probably an underestimate, hoping that they were going to sell more, but actually they only sold 3.6 million. I say only sold 3.6 million. That's still 300 and, you know, whatever million quid in their coffers. They don't really understand why it's not been more better well received, and they're kind of looking for reasons, saying people probably haven't quite understood it, or they need to experience it. We can't, within our media and advertising, we can't quite get across how amazing this technology is. But I think you hit the nail on the head a few weeks ago and you said, well, it's just phones.
Yeah.
Basically, you can't sell a device for 150 quid or whatever it is and then sell games for 30, 40 quid.
No.
And expect people to buy them when they can get them on their phones for £2.
It's the games at that kind of price. You know, for a mobile device, the smartphones are good enough. Games are good enough.
You can't really fault. I mean, it's you. Well, you can't really question Nintendo. They've got things right for many years. I just don't. I think they've underestimated. I know they even said, you know, Apple is our biggest competitor at the moment. You know, they didn't mention any game manufacturers or device manufacturers. They just said Apple. I think they got it right, but they've sort of. They've missed also. I mean, the fact that there's not really as much of a run on 3D devices as everyone in the tech community. When as I say, everyone in the device community thought there was going to be.
Well, I still think 3D TVs have failed.
I don't think they've failed. I think they're just going to they will just sweep into being.
Oh, the next time you buy a TV, it will have 3D. But I don't think people are buying TVs for 3D the same way that people bought TVs for HD. That's what I mean.
Maybe the next generation of consoles, if they've got proper 3D built in from the start,
yeah,
will probably be an instigator to go and buy one because it'll be worthwhile buying it for a game.
Maybe.
Anyway, maybe. So yes, they're disappointed with their Nintendo, disappointed with the sales, but they're still making money, I'm sure.
And I guess June will be interesting because they're going to show the Wii 2.
Whatever they're going to call that, more Wii.
Surely you're ticking the... No, I better not.
Right. You better take this final story for me.
So Darren Gibson is a footballer, and Chris loves football, so that's why he knows nothing about this. But Darren Gibson is a footballer from Man U. And over the last few weeks, there's been a whole lot of footballers jumping on the Twitter bandwagon. And there's some have been on it for a couple of years. You know, Rio Ferdinand's been there for years and all that kind of good stuff. But Colleen Rooney joined and got abused. So Wayne Rooney joined and got like 200,000 followers in 2 days. So then Darren Gibson, not so well known, joined Twitter before shutting the account down within a couple of hours. And you may ask why. So let me just give you some sample tweets that Darren got in 2 hours. And his gamer tag, his Twitter name was DGibbo28. So this is from one fan. Your performance on Saturday was one of the worst I've ever seen of any United player. Scared of the ball much. DGibbo28 hasn't tweeted yet. Seems somewhat fitting after the countless anonymous performances we've seen from the footballer, in quotes. DGibbo28. My mate thought you're about 33 years old in the heart of midfield. Movement like Pirlo. Another one. Team do all the hard work keeping possession, then you hit Rose Z every bleep time. And then the final one that really probably hit home, the biggest compliment I can give you is you're better than Carrick. And so after 2 hours, he left. Without
he
ever
decided
tweeting. Yep.
It wasn't really for him.
No. No, a bit like football, it's not really for him. But saying that, he's earning 20 grand a week. You know what I mean? He's like, he's, you know, it's...
If you signed up to Twitter and then the next thing you knew, you were just getting a barrage of... Absolutely.
Bring it.
Yeah, I guess we'd maybe bring it, but still, yeah, you think, well, it's not for me. It's a bit like waking up in the morning, getting punched in the face and thinking, oh, let's go back to bed.
It's a bit like turning up at work, getting abuse all day and going home. You're thinking, this is great. Anyway. see work today, awful. See after work, great.
Yeah, see happy days.
Oh yeah, it's been really good.
Okay, that was the end of the news, and we are going to move on to some picks.
If that works out to be an hour, because I don't know how long you were down for. I don't think you were down for much.
We're about an hour now, yes.
Well, an hour 15, I don't think you were down for 15 minutes, so we're over the hour.
Sorry, guys.
Hey! Anyway,
on to good things, which is Portal 2. So Portal 2 came out the end of last week, and I had completed it after the first, basically in the first 4 days, that is multiplayer and single player. And that is not because it is, you know, hugely disappointing and short game. It's because it's a hugely amazing and great game that I chewed up in mammoth gaming sessions, basically. And I wish I hadn't, because now I can't play it anymore. I think, I don't know if you will agree, it's probably the best multiplayer experience that's ever been conceived on a console. Or get a computer, probably.
Oh, I don't know.
Did you not find it that good?
So I had it for a week. And I didn't put it in my Xbox. But that was more because I was pretty busy. I was off on holiday and there was just lots of other things happening. And I was desperate to play it, and I just never did. And the way it's worked out is our friend Brian. So me and Brian are going through the multiplayer. And it has been, I mean, time just disappears. We start and then it's like, oh, 2 hours have gone.
Yep.
You know, so we are really enjoying it.
It's the only game that has what I'd call proper cooperation. Okay, oh, team-based events, there's positioning tactics.
And the bit I've really liked is we're both struggling, and then the penny drops. One of us, the penny will drop, and it's not the same person all the time. It's like, oh, what if we try this? Oh, that's genius, and it worked. And you're like, that is really nice. And it's obviously what's obvious is it's the amount of playtesting that's gone through. It is so polished.
It's incredibly polished. And for the amount of variabilities and variants in that game, it's very cleverly done.
So I don't get me wrong, I have really enjoyed it.
There's going to be memorable experiences from this game that you would never get from any other game, I think.
No.
I think that's fair to say. Because you could share that experience with one other person as well when you're playing through the multiplayer bit.
And the other thing we talked about was that I don't think I could play it with you and it would be the same. Because you'd know.
It has to be, I think you have to have two new people to it to really get the
most out of it. It's like what we talked about was, remember Big Jasper when he'd played through Halo and Easy and then we teamed up because he wanted the skills and he was like, go here, do this.
Oh, you're going to see this next, then you're going to do that next and do this.
And you're just like,
it's the discovery. But it's worth pointing out that it's not just, I mean, the multiplayer game is in effect totally separate from the single player. And the single player is also, it's incredibly well voice acted. Again, it's very slick, very clever, the way it introduces you to the game. It's kind of what Portal, I guess, was always destined to be. Fairly decent little story.
And if you've got
funny.
I want to also say one thing. If you've got a PS3, good luck with that multiplayer.
Right, yes, because they have what they call emoticons and ways of pointing out things and without a voice or whatever. But
well, without anything, online gaming is dead at the moment. They can't even do that.
Oh, of course they can't do that either, yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of robbed a story to put it in as your pick.
Yeah.
But there's free downloadable content coming.
There is. They have announced Valve have been very generous with all their updates, things like the Left 4 Dead they've been very good with over the years. And they have announced that the first downloadable content will be free across all platforms. So PS3, PC and Xbox, which was unexpected, I guess. But yes, so we will be getting new test chambers, leaderboards and challenge modes, and new multiplayer modes for free. And that will be coming in summer.
And what I would say is, see if you're not a gamer and you've got a Mac, or if you've got a PC and you're not a gamer, download Steam and try this, because it is breath of fresh air. You know, you're not pressured, you don't have to do things, you know, nobody's, you know, you're not going to be playing against other people and getting shot in the head all the time and thinking, oh, I hate this, it's a great, great game.
It's a mind bender.
Yep.
I just want the next game already, but that's just me. I really loved it. That was great.
Cool.
So let's have a Europica.
We'll do this very quickly. It was three iPad apps that I wanted to mention. First one was 4OD. So this is the kind of iPlayer equivalent from Channel 4. Bit confused. It's an iPad app. The app's well done. They're saying it's free for a limited time because it's sponsored. So you get a lot of Heineken sponsorship in it. But I can't understand somebody paying for it, because it's also got, alongside the sponsorship, separate adverts as well. And I don't understand if the adverts are going to be there when you've paid for an app. So I'm a bit confused why they would necessarily charge for the app. But also it's like, so yes, the video works, but there's not much else. You know, so there's no AirPlay support. The video quality is okay, but it just felt all a bit, you know, meh. You know, there was nothing really stood out.
It's probably better to have it than not to have it, though, right?
Yeah. You know, so get it while it's free. You know,
when they say free for a limited period, you don't think they're talking about subscription model? You think they're just talking
No,
about...
I think the article I read was that the app will become a paid app at some point.
If it's only 30p or whatever, then...
If it's 59p, fair enough, but if they jumped up to like, you know, $2.99, I would be like saying to people, don't bother, you know, just go to the website. Although it's probably all in Flash and it doesn't work and all that good stuff.
That's scurrilous. It's probably fine.
The next two apps are a lot better. So there's one called Terra. And this is a web browser, but it has tabs. It's very fast. It's got an incognito mode. You can change what the browser is. So you can say, well, I'm not really a mobile, you know, Safari browser on an iPad. I'm actually IE7 or I'm Firefox or I'm Chrome. It's got a lot more features than Safari. And I've actually been using it instead of Safari. It's very, very nice.
Do you think it's going to be a keeper, or do you think it's just a bit of a transient?
Well, I have moved Safari out of my little dock at the bottom and put Terra in its place.
Yeah, okay. And I guess tab browsing on a device like that would be perfect.
Yeah, it's lovely. Really, really nice. And it's been very stable, you know, because one of the things that's always about, it always gets me, is it stable? Is it going to cope with all the different formats and all the different code that people have out there? And so far, it's been fine.
Okay.
The final one, a lovely app, but a bit gimmicky. It's called Planetary. So it's from a company called Bloom, and it's a visual music player. And what they've done is, if you've got a nice music collection on your iPad, and it is iPad only, so basically it's a series of planets and stars are displayed, and the artists are stars. And when you select an artist, the different albums for that artist are displayed as planets around the star, and you can move around and rotate around it. It's all very graphical. And then tracks on the album are the moons round about the planets.
So and each planet has 13 moons.
Yeah, but it's just visually, it's a very nice way of browsing your music collection. Something a bit different. And then you have the bog standard kind of, you know, play controls, etc. Go to the website, the link's in the show notes, gives you a video demo. Again, it's free. If you've got an
planetary.bloom.io.
See if you've got an iPad, it's free, get it. And that's it. Nice and simple. That was almost Scottish.
What, me?
Yeah, very good.
I'll work on it for next time, eh? No, I won't. Right, that is the end of our epic podcast. Thank you very much for getting this far. You have done very well.
Do you know that would have been a far better name for the podcast? Epicpodcast.com. See if that's available. I'm going to be gutted. Carry on. I'll check.
Carry on. So basically, that is the end of our podcast. And if you would like to find out more about us,
the
articles, we are on digitaloutbox.com. You can email us, info@digitaloutbox.com. And we are on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. If you would like to find out more about me and my steps that I lack taking, I'm on Cheesy UK on Twitter. Ian, where can we find out more about you?
On Twitter, it's Sweeper, and blogs, END.net. And I finally did my post on Fitbit, and it was mammoth. I think it was 2,500 words.
Blooming heck.
Blooming heck. But it's like, if you're interested in any of these kind of, you know, fitness type devices, head there. And I did say I was going to cross post, but I can't be arsed.
We should big up the Fitbit, because firstly, to be able to wash Fitbits.
Yes.
In a washing machine on a full cycle. And it survives.
Well, I'll tell you what, maybe we'll do that as a joint pick next time.
Okay, let's do it.
And we can talk about what a Fitbit is and how you can't buy it in the UK.
Yes. And also, I better do some mind washing on people to make sure that they don't remember me telling them about my washing.
No. Or the fact
these are not the droids you're looking for.
Or the fact that it's cracked mines.
Yes. So let's ignore that, and we'll talk about that next time.
All right.
Cheers for listening. Bye.
Ta-da. Happy birthday to you.
Woo-hoo.
Happy birthday to you. Still feel guilty with podcasted on your birthday and you've still not had your mini burgers.
Got to cook my mini burgers.
Aye. Inverness. Get it right up you. That's fantastic news. See the pagination that they added to Google Docs? It does make our show notes feel incredibly long. I'm sure they're not that
page
long.
Page 12 of 12.
Where does it say page numbers?
It doesn't say page numbers.
All right. I'm going to count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh my goodness, 8.
It is 11.
9. 10. Oh no. 11. No way. 10.5 pages. Everything we do, listeners, we do it for you.
Got Brian Adams in me, you know? No. Don't say that.